Hello and welcome. I'm Peggy Nolan, your host of Henzo Gracie New Hampshire Podcasting. Led by Professor Kevin Landry, Henzo Gracie New Hampshire is the premier Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Power Fitness Academy in New England with locations in Exeter and Salem, New Hampshire. Whether you want to train for fitness or train to compete, Henzo Gracie New Hampshire is the place to be. Call 603-777-2775 to schedule a tour of our facilities today. Welcome, and let me tell you a little bit about our fabulous guest today. Sitting next to me is Daniel Gracie, and Daniel is a fourth degree black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He has
you're
a fifth now. Okay, I'm sorry.
Getting a little older.
Okay, so he's a fifth degree black belt. That's so awesome. Daniel has training academies in the United States, Brazil, and Japan. Anywhere else?
No, that's
okay,
it.
Okay, that's it.
I don't need any more.
Okay. In Brazil, Daniel trained under Carlinhos Gracie and received his black belt from him at the age of 23. Daniel began competing in various city and state jiu-jitsu tournaments in 1982. And beginning in 1994, Daniel competed in the Brazilian Nationals and in the Mundials.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for pronouncing that right for me. His submission grappling career includes two events in 2003 and in 2005. In Japan, the Gracie family were regular competitors in the Pride events. And beginning in 2002, Daniel fought in four Pride events as a heavyweight, winning three times. Daniel fought against some of Japan's top competitors, each time in an arena with well over 60,000 fans. I don't know how. Oh my gosh, that's way too many people.
I was more nervous with the public than with the fight.
I bet. In Europe, Daniel has fought in the inaugural IFC Israel Fighting Championship in Tel Aviv, Israel in 2010. He won by the rear naked choke over his opponent, Martin Wojcik. Hope I said that right. So welcome, Daniel. Thank you so much for taking time.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure. Anything that I need to do to spread the word of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, I'm going to be there, you know, just to show people our lifestyle.
And it's amazing. It really is. So I know you have a really funny story to tell, or at least I've been told it's a funny story, and I really want to hear it. So how did you start training with Henzo Gracie?
Well, people don't know, but we used to train at the old academy in Barra that became Barra Gracie. And it's not the Barra Gracie of today, okay? It's the Barra Gracie of the old times. And Henzo was actually my teacher on that time. We have Henzo and the Machado brothers teaching us inside of the Gracie school. And it was pure jiu-jitsu, and we had the toughest team in the world. Like we beat anyone that we could beat. Like no school could get close to our school because we're very united, because there was friends growing together inside of the school, you know. So when we went to compete, we kind of compete together, one supporting the other, one, you know, celebrating victors together. And it was very it was a very good energy. And Henzo moved to US and he started to train all those tough fighters, all those MMA fighters, jiu-jitsu fighters. And we kind of of course I would speak to him once in a while, but not train with him because he was here, and of course we're in Brazil. And after I won everything that I could win in jiu-jitsu, I say, you know what? It's time to move forward. You know, I want to try to do an MMA fight. So I call him and I said, Henzo, I want to fight. I want to fight MMA. You know, I want to see how it is. Like, I already have 5 Brazilian titles in jiu-jitsu and the black belt.
Wow.
I went 4 times to the final, winning 2. 5 times to the final, actually. I was 3 times silver medalist.
Okay.
On the words, and 2 times gold medalist.
That's awesome.
And I said, you know what? I think I'm not going to do anything else in jiu-jitsu. Now it's time to MMA. And so I call him, and he's like, okay, but have you boxed before? I'm like, yeah. Of course I was lying. You, have you trained wrestling? I'm like, yeah, yeah, I train. Sometimes I train wrestling here. And he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. It's like, okay, I can get you a fight. But first, I'm not going to trust you. You come to U.S. and we'll see how it goes. Are you in shape? I'm like, yeah, I'm in shape. So he bought me a ticket and he flew me here to New York. So first thing, when we get to the airport, he goes pick me up. And on the way to his house, he's looking at my belly. And he's like, lift your shirt up. I'm like, why? He's like, you told me that you're in shape. Let me see your belly. I'm like, I am in shape. He's like, no, you're not. Lift your shirt. So when I lift my shirt up, he's like, man, I can't believe. I told that you're like, that you're in shape, that you look like a model. You can't fight fat like that. You know, you have to look good because I told them that you look good, that you look like a model. So, of course, training start. And I'm a pure jiu-jitsu guy. I never boxed in my life. I never wrestled in my life. It was pure. It was not true. I was lying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys watch Hansel Gracie Legacy,
mm-hmm.
you're going to see how patient he was with me. Like, he was cursing 24 hours. He was, like, making me, you know, train, I don't know, 10 times a day. And then he would complain that on the way to the school, on the way back home, I would sleep the whole way because he was making me work so hard that every free time that I had, I would take a nap.
Yeah, you know, those I'd power naps. Too.
But I was, yeah, there were, the funny story was that I lied to him saying that I was in shape, that I was training boxing. It was just because it was a dream that I wanted. It was
mm-hmm.
to fight. And then when he told me that I was fighting in Pride, it was like I couldn't, you know, I couldn't hold myself. I was so excited because it's my first fight.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, today everybody fights like amateur events and, you know, they get ready for a big event. I jump in my first fight. There was 65,000 people watching my fight.
That had to have been scary.
I'm telling you, when they call my name and I step into the walkway to the ring, I forgot about the fight. I was looking. There was people above my head. That's how packed the place was.
Wow.
But then, as soon as I step on the ring and I'm like, okay, I have to concentrate. I'm in a fight. Let's see how it goes. Because reality is, like, a lot of people, they play tough and they want to say that they're tough. And me, I was actually trying something. I didn't know my reaction after I get punched on my face. I didn't know my reaction, you know, if someone, you know, tried to hurt me. Of course I did. I have a lot of fights in Brazil on the street because it's a tough place and you have
right.
to fight to defend yourself. But not in a ring. Like, in Pride was, the first round was 10 minutes and then 2 5-minute rounds. It was a
That's
long
like
time.
Exhausting.
And no one is going to jump in there and, you know, break the fight apart. Like a street fight, people think that they, oh yeah, I fought for 10 minutes. No, they fight for like 20 seconds and looks to them that it's 10 minutes, but it's not. But there it was like another reality. You jump in the first fight of your life with 65,000 people watching, you know, in Japan. It was great because, of course, first minute of the fight, I got a knockdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's one way to get out of that 10-minute round. Just
well,
take your opponent out
so,
right away.
Yeah, so no, I get knocked
down.
Oh,
you got knocked
down.
Yeah,
the Japanese punched me and
okay.
I went down. But then that's how I knew if I like it or not. So he punched me. Of course, I went down. I couldn't see anything. It was like someone like just cover your ears and your eyes. I couldn't understand the voice. I just hear. I heard Hanzo calling me, but I couldn't see his face because I was out. And then, like, the voice are like kind of confused. And then I start to hear his voice, Daniel,
right.
Daniel. And then I look at him. And he's like, are you all right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, you told me that you could take a punch. So he's teasing me in the middle of the fight. So I try even to look at him, but I couldn't look at him right. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to recover. And then I realized that I liked that so much because the only thing I want to do was to knock that guy out back.
Right.
So my reaction was actually like, I want to win this fight. And then I'm like, you know what? I like that, and that's what I'm going to start to do. Like, that's the adrenaline back again to the competition game. So that's the funniest story. Like
that is.
Oh.
I see if somebody had knocked me out or just punched me in the face, I just would have stayed down.
There's maybe no, you never know your reaction. That's what I say. Like, you never know your reaction. Your reaction could be being more aggressive and be smart and knocking the person out. Or yes, you, like, I'm not saying that you're gonna be, you know, like, you turn your back and run away. That could happen. But I don't think that you are a weak person because you do that.
Right.
And that's what jiu-jitsu teaches you, is, you know, how to think before you react. That's,
you know, I do take that back for a second, because I did grow up with four younger brothers, and they would throw a punch at me, and yeah, I would just turn around and punch them right back.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, that's what I would do. So I understand that you are getting somebody ready for a fight in April, and it's okay, you can talk about him, but what we would like to know is how you actually train and condition the fighters that are going in. What kind of regime do you put in?
A lot of people like to do everything. I don't like to do. I know how to make them good strikers.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to condition them. I know how to make. I've been doing that my whole life. I know how to do that. But what I think is that to get someone ready for a fight, there's nothing better than work what you're going to do in the fight. So what I do is the same training that anybody does. Like, whatever. I'm not going to say that anybody does. I have my style.
Right.
Like, on my style, I make them work extremely hard. I make them not do push-ups or pull-ups. If they're going to do some conditioning for fighting, I make them punch the bag for hours. I make them work on the wall for hours, work on ground and pound for hours, take downs for, like, you know, many rounds. Because this is what I think that teaches your body how to react in the fight. The conditioning, I let them do outside of my school.
So they do it
step,
on their own.
They do it on their own. When they step in my mats, I work with them pure jiu-jitsu, wrestling, Muay Thai, boxing, whatever we need to work to get them ready, strategy. And I make them work hard on that, because that's what I think it works. Because I think that fighting, it's a lot of muscle memory. So which more repetition we make them do, more they're going to react to on the fight. Faster they're gonna react on the fight, and then when they get themselves stuck on situations that we train, they're not gonna freak out. They're gonna recognize the situation, and then they're gonna, you know, be able to escape, be able to react.
You know, I think that is true for just about it. Whether they're training to go into a fight, or they're just training because they come here for a good workout, or whatever. When you train that repetition, and you are put in a training scenario where you have to grapple or, you know, roll with someone, and you have that muscle memory and you don't freak out. Because I know it took me almost a month when I started rolling jiu-jitsu to kind of get over that panic feeling. And then once I was like, oh, this is it. Okay, fine.
And that's what when people ask me how jiu-jitsu can help on their personal life, like, you're not fighting every day.
No.
You're not going to the street and, you know,
no,
rolling with someone on the street. But what happened is, because jiu-jitsu puts yourself in such a uncomfortable positions, and you have to think and you have to create a strategy to escape, when you catch yourself in the day-by-day base, like in problems, like with work or with family, with whatever, it gives you the confidence and the mindset of thinking before you react.
Absolutely.
You create strategy for your life. And this is the magic of jiu-jitsu. That's what my uncle learned, Carlos Gracie. Carlos Gracie Jr. Carlinhos, it's his son.
Okay.
My teacher. And his father, when he started to develop the Gracie legacy, the Gracie lifestyle, that was the most important thing that he wanted to teach people, is that jiu-jitsu will make them better human beings, not only fighters.
Right, because it does make you stop and take a breath if you're in a tight situation.
You think before you react.
You do.
That's the beauty of jiu-jitsu.
Right, I'm glad we actually talked about that, because a lot of people don't understand that jiu-jitsu is not just a sport or a martial art, but it's a philosophy.
Yes,
of
exactly,
life.
Exactly.
Right.
And another thing that I learned in jiu-jitsu, especially growing up with Carlinhos and Barra Gracie, was that teamwork makes you tougher. Like you when you know that you have like an army behind you, you know, when you know that you have a team behind you, it makes you more confident and makes you want to win for that team. And that's why now at my team, like I opened my school in Philadelphia 2 years, not even 2 years and a half, like about 2 years ago. And my fighters are like, they're beating everyone. They're winning all the fights.
That's awesome.
Like it's, I think 95% of the fights that we had to now, we won either by submission or knockouts. And I'm not a striker, but I'm teaching them how to knock people out because I've been working with this for so long that I have the vision. But the most important is that I'm teaching them how to be a team. And every one of them are understanding that. Every one of them are winning fights. Every one of them are getting tougher. Every one of them are getting better because they recognize that we are fighting for all of us, not for one person.
Not for one person.
Yeah, the guys that get there and they see that we're not selfish, that we're not going to give them special attention for one person, they go out right away. They choose another team because then there they, you know, might be the stars. In my team, everybody has the same attention. And I think all Hanzo Gracie schools are the same thing. That's what Hanzo taught us.
Right. It's almost like, you know, the New England Patriots, right? That's kind of like their philosophy, which is no one is really the superstar. They work together as a team, and that's why they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. That's and especially in MMA, especially in jiu-jitsu, because you have to have a lot of heart, you know, and if you, like, let's say you have a weakness, you know, like you're afraid of a fight or something like that, but you know that you have the support of your friends behind you, that gives you, like, you know,
extra strength
to go and, like, I have the support of these people. You know, I'm not going to disappoint them because they're behind me and, you know, I can do that. And this makes you, like, a better human being because you are actually afraid of something, but you are, you know, facing that and, you know, winning. So
awesome.
It's magical.
It is magical. And being part of Kevin Landry's team is, you know, Hanzo Gracie New Hampshire is really, it's a great team to be part of.
Kevin actually has been with us since my first fight. When I came to New York first time, he was already there. Like we were always training together. And he knows that how important it is to, you know, to have loyalty, respect, and, you know, like, be able to recognize that you have a team behind you. It's not yourself. It's what it's going to take.
It's everybody.
It's going to make his students better. It's going to make, you know, his team better. That's the way it works.
Okay, so speaking of team, there's somebody on Kevin's team that would really, 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 really like to know how to get better at neon belly.
That's my specialty, so it's easy for me to answer.
Okay.
Well, what happened is the neon belly was created for people that stall on the bottom. Like, let's say you pass someone's guard and you get to the side control. They don't move.
Okay.
They just defend themselves, like, with hands protecting the neck, and there's nothing you can do. So on the old time jiu-jitsu, you put the neon belly, and there was 2 points. Today is still... is, but
oh, so that's a point. It's a two.
It's 2 points,
okay,
when you put the neon belly. So we could put the neon belly 10 times, and you make like those points every time you put the neon belly. Like today, you only can have one time.
Oh.
So you put the neon belly in someone, they give you the 2 points. If you go back to the side control, back to the neon belly, you can't get 2 points again.
Okay.
So if you work, you go to the guard, pass again, and then put the neon belly again, then they're gonna give you the 2 points.
Okay.
But reality is that the neon belly was to make these people open themselves so you could get submissions. But because of the points, they stop putting the knee heavy on the belly.
Oh, so they would just kind of like get the points?
Just getting the points and taking the knee off of the belly. And because I'm an old-timey jiu-jitsu guy, like even like since kids, I see how you put the neon belly. And it's not just, I always joke, I said, like, it's not like you're posing for a picture. You really, like, have to get heavy. So what I do is I get as low as possible from the floor.
Okay.
And I hold the person's back. My base,
okay,
my base, it's all on my hips. Okay, so do you understand better? Because I'm not going to, it's not a video, so I can't show
it. Right.
So what you do is imagine you are on the side control.
Okay.
But you put in between your chest and your opponent's chest, your knee.
Okay.
So I touch my, I almost touch my belly and my chest on top of my thigh with the knee on the person's solar plex.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a sandwich
going
down.
Yep.
So what happened is they have to move.
They have to move.
They have to
they
try to
breathe.
Move. They can't breathe. So when they put the hand on my knee, I go spinning arm bar. They put the hand on my knee, I go for the baseball choke. There's many things you can do in there. But that was the way to open people to you get submissions from the side control.
All right. All right. I'll remember that next time I put my knee on somebody's belly. So what's your favorite takedown?
I like the ochigari, that is the hook in between the legs, not the osotogari. The osotogari is the hook outside.
Okay.
The ochigari is the hook in between the legs. Like you walk in between the legs with your legs, and then you just do one hook, and you end up inside of the person's guard.
Gotcha.
Because I always did that since a blue belt, and I was like, I put everybody down, and I think it's a very technical takedown, and I use it also in MMA.
Okay.
I like it because you can use it either jiu-jitsu or MMA. You can switch to a double leg with the hook. So I love it. I think it's a very technical takedown. But any takedown, any judo throw, I love it.
Okay.
Love it. Yeah.
All right. So what's your favorite submission?
Definitely armbar.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I first learned my armbar. It was from you in the class I took about 4 years ago.
Nice.
Yep. I do remember that. So... before we leave this wonderful interview, because I'm enjoying myself, what are your three favorite training tips for people studying Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Well, one, of course, look for a real teacher.
Okay.
I'm not going to say a real black belt, because sometimes your area doesn't have a black belt. Your area is sometimes going to have like a purple belt, a brown belt, a blue belt, but at least... make sure your teacher has a decent lineage of jiu-jitsu. Otherwise, you're going to be wasting your time trying to learn from someone that doesn't know what he's doing. And because you have no concept of what is right or wrong, you're going to think that this is working until you go train somewhere else.
And you find
then you're going to like... Or I thought that I had that level, and you're going to feel ridiculous. And then what's going to happen is you're going to get frustrated, and you're going to stop training instead of looking for a real jiu-jitsu school. Another thing, like I said before, make sure the environment that you're getting into, it's a family environment. It's a team environment. It's a place that you know that people are not going to hurt you, but they're going to take care of you, and they're going to teach you slowly and... friendly people, because this way, even let's say that you go in there every day and you're getting tapped out, you're not learning, you're still going to feel comfortable to come back.
Yes.
Until you start to tap people, you start to, you know, use jiu-jitsu and learn jiu-jitsu. And the third one that is the most important, learn how to recognize your body type and use your jiu-jitsu for your body type. Recognizing your body type and the things you can do with your body is the most important thing for jiu-jitsu, because a lot of times I see people that they're like have short legs, but they're trying to do a triangular choke.
A little hard.
You understand? So this is going totally off your way.
Yeah.
You should be getting totally different positions from that. So if you're a tall guy, you're a short guy, you're a fat guy, you're a skinny guy, jiu-jitsu is for everyone. But you have to recognize what is going to be good for you. Because if you try to do a game, like you are a short person, you're trying to do a game that is for a long body, you're not going to be able to do it. And that's another thing that let people get frustrated. Because of course, you want to do everything.
Right.
You're like, you're getting all the information of jiu-jitsu, all those positions, and you want to use everything. But let me tell you one thing. You're not going to be able to use it.
I know.
Unfortunately, you're not going to be able to use everything you learn.
Right.
But you can learn. Okay. This is all knowledge. You teach your friends that have that body type. But try to recognize what can you do and build a game for you. Because this way, you're going to learn a lot faster than just like wasting your time trying to do positions that are not going to work for your body type.
Exactly. So, yeah. At 5'3", I definitely understand that.
But you're gonna do great things for a 5'3" person. You understand?
Yeah, I had some of my favorites, absolutely. And then there were some techniques that I was just like, you know, that's for somebody with legs that are a lot longer than mine.
You're good.
Yeah. So thank you so much for taking time out.
My pleasure. I actually want to give some advice also for MMA fighters, because now I'm training a lot of MMA fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And like my school is actually like growing very fast. Like I think it's, I don't know if it's the first school, but like I'm sure there are a lot of people that are listening. They're gonna recognize the name Paul Felder.
Okay.
Paul started to train with me in Philadelphia about when I opened the school like 2 years ago, and I saw that he had like this work ethic that I was really proud of training him, because I knew that he would get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So my advice for those people is that if they want to do that, if they really want to fight, they want to get punched in the face, do it thinking about the best events, thinking about the best of yourself. Don't do it halfway.
Right.
Don't do it on the amateur level. I know there's a lot of you guys are going to be fighting amateur events.
Right.
Don't think about those amateur events. Think about the UFC.
The 65,000 people.
Exactly. You think about, if you train for that, if you train for the best, when you get to those amateur events, people are going to look at you and they're going to say, what is that guy doing there? What is that woman doing there?
Right.
They should be on the UFC. They should be on the Bellator. They should be on Cage Fury. They should be on like big events, because you're showing what you want.
Right.
And that's
that's the level you're training at.
Exactly. And that's what's happening. The example, Paul, like first fight on the UFC, he fought a guy in Canada that had 10 fights, one loss, 8 submissions. And he crushed him. He crushed him. And the second fight, they already give him Danny Castillo. That is a guy that is on the UFC for 7 years.
Right.
And he, like, it's one of the, he knocked him out, like, with one of the, like, most beautiful knockouts in the history of the UFC, with a spinning back fist. And now, April 18th, he's fighting Jim Miller. That's the number 11 in the world. So, that proves to me that this guy's on the right path.
Yeah.
If people want him to be fighting those tough guys, no one is building him to fight, like, okay, you're going to fight this guy, it's your level. And then slowly you're going up. No,
you're training up.
Exactly.
From the
so
beginning.
They look at this guy's fights on Cage Fury and they said, we can't give him a weak opponent. We have to give them top level opponents, because this guy's on the top level game. And that's how I think everyone should train if they want to do it.
Exactly. I like that philosophy. If you're going to go big, you might as well start training big even before you get there. Which usually goes into one of my own philosophies, which is start before you're ready.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why a lot of people, they're great fighters, and then when they go to the UFC, they lose. People don't believe that they lost so easily. Like, why? This guy is great. They're not training on that level. They're training on the amateur events level. So when they go up and they need to show people how good they are, they're not training for that. They're not mentally prepared, they're not physically prepared. So that's why I think that my philosophy is working, because I train those guys not to fight small events. I train them to
really
get the call
ones.
For any big event, and they're going to be ready.
Right. That's awesome. That's great advice. That's great fight advice. It's great training advice. It's great life advice, right? Because it's the same thing. Why play, if you're going to go look for a job, why play looking for the small job with the small salary? Go for the
play
big stuff. Play
good.
Amen. Thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to you.
My pleasure.
All right.
Anytime.
Well, thank you so much. And this is Henzo Gracie, podcasting New Hampshire.